Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Excited to be back with you today on this Monday. I know that the Iowa State Fair opens today, so I know that there are some of you who are pretty excited about that. I'm now actively lobbying for invitations to the Iowa State Fair for next year because I feel like there will be people there we want to talk to. Not just fair food people, but it's going to be 2019, and I feel like people are going to start visiting Iowa for reasons that are not just related to butter, although I hear you guys have some pretty great butter sculptures. I don't know. I think I need to see that. Okay. So we certainly want to be praying the news today. We are praying the news in relationship to the situation in Indonesia and the earthquake that took place in Lombok. And we want to be praying for recovery efforts there. We want to be praying for people in Chicago after one of the most violent weekends on record. We want to be praying for people in Portland and the ongoing, what some would say are demonstrations, and others would say, others would have other names for what's happening out there. We need a restoration of peace in those places. We want to continue to pray for people in Shasta County and the car fire out there, and just ask that God would send the rain. We need to be praying for people, that same prayer in Portugal, that those fires that are spreading now to dozens of villages, threatening many, many people, that somehow God would show mercy and grace and pour out blessings upon people in harm's way. So I know that you're with me in praying the news in all kinds of circumstances. I had a lot of folks communicating over the weekend about the enemy of the people phrase. Could we talk about the enemy of the people? Could we talk about whether or not the press is the enemy of the people? Could we talk about who the enemy of the people is? Okay, so I'm going to deal with it. If you're not familiar with this conversation, it grows out of language that the president of the United States has adopted in relationship to describing some members of the press. Now, I think that is probably that's probably as much as we can say about what the president means by it, because we don't know what he means precisely. And so you have heard his daughter, Ivanka, weigh in. You have heard his wife, Melania, weigh in on this and other subjects related to phrases. You've heard Kellyanne Conway weigh in on this. So you are the Christian in the conversation today. What are you going to say about the enemy of the people? Well, first of all, you are going to note that we have an enemy. There is a reality that we are opposed. There is an enemy out there. However, the enemy is not the press. We have an enemy. He is the father of lies. He's interested in stealing, killing, and destroying. He's interested in darkness, not light. For those of you who are familiar with Scripture, you know who the enemy is. And it's not the press. So I think that one of the risks and dangers that we face in using language like enemy of the people is that it actually has meaning and it has context, and it's been used in the past by some pretty awful people in defense of some pretty awful things. So it was used in the French Revolution to identify people who were then sent to the guillotine. It's used by Stalin. It's used by Mao. These are not people who we want to in any way be emulating, all right? And we certainly do not want to be falling into patterns of behavior that are in any way promoting of this kind of justification for behavior towards people, because once you have turned them into enemies, then you begin to imagine that you can justify behavior towards them that is not respectful of their dignity as human beings. And so I just want you to be careful as you use the language, and I want you to be quick to identify the real enemy, the enemy of our souls. And if you're comfortable calling him the devil and calling him Satan, then by all means do so. You certainly should be comfortable calling him the father of lies. You certainly should be comfortable recognizing that he is interested in stealing, destroying, and killing love, joy, peace, light, freedom, all of the things that we value. And so as Christians, the truth matters. Freedom matters, not just the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech, but also the freedom of the press. And so when you and I talk about being people who want to stand up and defend the freedom of religion in America today and the freedom of religion for people around the world, we also need to be people who recognize that in the midst of that, we have to be able to speak freely. And speaking freely includes having a press that is able to do its job. Now, what does the press do? Well, there's, if you think about this for just a second, the answer is obvious. They press. All right. Well, people don't like to be pressed. They certainly don't like to be pressured. The nature and calling of the press is to press. So that includes the application of pressure to people in authority or in accountability, that they be transparent, that we have information. So I want you to be mindful of that in the conversation about the use of the phrase enemy or enemies of the people. I would like for you to be stepping into those conversations today with the mind of Christ and identifying the real enemy. And the enemy is not those who are reporting, and I know that I'm going to get immediate feedback. I'm going to get immediate feedback about the fake news. Well, you and I have talked about the truth and how much the truth matters and telling the truth and being people of truth and supporting the truth. We talk about that on and on and on and on. And you and I would, I hope, agree that truth is important no matter who is speaking it. And if the truth makes us uncomfortable, we got to bring ourselves into alignment or ask the Holy Spirit to bring us into alignment with the truth, not the other way around. We're not going to massage information to fit our agenda or to fit our ideas about things. We are going to be people who become more and more conformed to the one who is the way and the truth and the life, even Jesus Christ. All right, friends, I have a special treat for us today. I'm actually sitting here face to face. I'm going to have a conversation with Tyson Langhofer. Tyson is an attorney. He is an expert on what's going on America's college campuses. And so we're going to have a conversation about free speech. We're going to have a conversation about what students across America are being exposed to. And we're going to talk about how we can help students, how we can help faculty members, how we can actually help universities in our communities to be places where freedom really thrives in the area of free speech. So you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I'll be right back with Tyson Langhofer. Hey, friends, welcome back. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Joining me today is Tyson Langhofer. Tyson, let's just start with what do you do? What is your role and responsibility? I know that you are you work with the Alliance for Defending Freedom. Tell us what that is and what your role is.
Sure. Alliance for Defending Freedom is an organization that defends the rights of everyone to freely live out their faith. And we're the legal organization that provides legal services to individuals that find themselves on the wrong side of the government power, trying to essentially tell them that they can't live according to the dictates of their conscience. So any problems they experience, the First Amendment. And I specifically am the director of the Center for Academic Freedom, and that's a center within ADF that defends the rights of students and faculty to freely live out their faith on the college campuses.
So it's probably a surprise to some people that college campuses would be environments where people were seeking to limit speech, because we think of college campuses as being the place where you go for the free exchange of ideas, where you go to, like, you know, explore what the truth might be and every avenue to it. Tell us what college students in America are experiencing.
Sure, it's frightening and surprising because we have viewed, and we all kind of in our minds have this view of the universities as this marketplace of ideas where you can explore various aspects of philosophy and so forth and figure out what the truth is. But unfortunately, what you're seeing today is a uniformity of thought and a suppression of ideas by certain ideologies. And so if a college student expresses something that's outside of the mainstream liberal orthodoxy on campus, there's a whole host of policies in place that are designed to suppress and chill and basically squelch that speech. And unfortunately, what we see is a lot of religious students are saying things that are outside of the mainstream liberal orthodoxy, and thus they are on the wrong side of the university's policies.
Okay, so you used some words there that I think would be helpful to define for people. When we think of mainstream liberal orthodoxy, there will be at least some listeners who are thinking mainline Christian thoughts. So they're saying, hey, my mainline church has a pretty mainstream liberal orthodoxy. But that's not what you're talking about.
That's correct. I mean, I think it is important to define that. When I talk about liberal, it's really probably more progressive. It would be a better way to define it, because the traditional liberals in the past have been the protectors of free speech. And you saw that in the 60s at UC Berkeley, where they protected, they were the ones being suppressed. Their ideas were different than the norm, and they were being suppressed. And so what I'm talking about is a progressive ideology. And here's the heart, the root of all of these policies is this. There is a growing belief that speech is violence, that certain speech that you disagree with can be so outrageous that it's literally equivalent to violence, and thus they have the ability to utilize physical force to stop you from speaking that. So they've turned it on its head, and they've basically said, I have the right to physically assault you because you've said something that I disagree with. And so the belief on college campus is a growing belief that if you say something that I disagree with, I have a right not to hear that. And then I will go to the university to tell them, you need to stop this person from saying this because I have a right not to hear that because it's offensive to me.
So what we would be talking about then is the right to censor speech based on how people might respond. How could I ever predict that?
That's the exact problem. And what you have is there's a term in First Amendment law that's called the heckler's veto. And the Supreme Court has said it multiple times. And a heckler's veto is basically where you have a person speaking and you have a heckler. Everybody's heard of hecklers.
I've had hecklers.
I'm sure you
super
have.
Duper familiar with hecklers.
So the heckler's veto would be when you have somebody speaking something and somebody in the crowd disagrees with it and they are heckling that. And then they basically, the authorities get worried about violence. And in order to stop the threat of violence, they say, I'm going to stop the speaker. As opposed to saying, I'm going to stop the heckler, who is the one who engaging in the physical violence or the assaults or the threats. And so what the heckler's veto says is, hey, government, you don't have the right to shut down speech if somebody else disagrees with it. What you have the obligation to do is to stop others from physically, violently assaulting that person that they're saying something wrong. Now, the reason the government typically shuts down the heckler is because it's easier, right, to shut down the speaker. It's easier to do that than to have a whole crowd that you're shutting down. You just say, speaker, please move. You're making people uncomfortable, right? That's easier. But what the First Amendment says is no, that the speech that needs protecting is the speech that people disagree with. It's not the majority speech. It's the speech that makes people uncomfortable. And I think that's what we forget about. Even as Christians and as conservatives, sometimes, you know, like, well, that's a really offensive thing that person said. Well, yes, that's the exact type of speech that the First Amendment was designed to protect, the speech the majority doesn't want to hear.
All right, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. My conversation partner is Tyson Langhofer. Tyson is responsible for the Center for Academic Freedom with the Alliance Defending Freedom. And so he's an attorney, but he's an attorney who knows a lot about what's happening on our college campuses. And he has represented college students and student organizations throughout the country and defending their freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of exercise of religion, on and on and on. And so, Tyler, let's talk, Tyler. I don't know who Tyler is, but Tyson is who's here with me today. Tyson, let's talk about some of those specific cases.
Sure. So, you know, we hear a lot in the news about specific cases, but I think what people would be surprised about is the breadth and the range of the policies that, we're dealing with. So one rising trend we see is the rise of trigger warnings. And again, it goes back to this notion that, students should be sheltered from something that may offend them. And so we represented the Students for Life at the University of Miami, Miami University of Ohio. And so Students for Life had a they wanted to their goal, their mission is to provide resources to women who find themselves pregnant on campus. It's, I mean, it's something, a mission that we could all get behind, right? Provide resources to women that find themselves pregnant on campus. In order to, so what they do is they go out and they talked about, you know, the pregnancy centers in town and so forth. And another thing they do is just raise the level of discourse on abortion. And one of the things they wanted to do is have a cemetery of innocence display. So they're going to erect crosses in a lawn on campus, in an open area of campus, and each cross was going to represent a certain number of abortions that occur every year in America. And they did it last year, and it went well. And in fact, they found out, several women told them later, that they had been contemplating abortion. They were pregnant, had contemplating abortion, saw that, recognized that the power of that is that each one of those represents a human life, and they changed their mind. And so that speech, that expression, saved lives. So they were super excited about doing it this last year. They got it approved, but then the school said, you know what, we're afraid that's going to offend some students. You're going to have, you can do it, but you're going to have to put signs all around that so that students that don't want to view it can walk the other way. And Ellen Whitman, the president, said, you know what, that I don't agree with that. I don't, I'm being compelled to speak a message that I disagree with, and you're conditioning my speech upon speaking a message that I disagree with. And so she said, no, I'm not going to do that. And so they didn't do the display. They were forced to cancel the display because of this condition placed upon it. They contacted us, and we were able to file a lawsuit. And thankfully, immediately after filing it, the university agreed to remove that, to modify that policy, and to no longer require trigger warnings, because what you saw was that there's tons of displays out there every year. Never had anybody else been required to put up a trigger warning, no matter how offensive, so-called, the speech was. And so what they were doing was they were conditioning this, you know, this pro-life speech upon, you know, placing these warnings around it. So that's definitely something that we see a lot, especially in the pro-life context. We represent a lot of Students for Life clubs, and they do great work providing great resources to women, and yet they're being shut down all the time on campuses throughout the country.
Friends, you can find out more about this specific story at adflegal.org. That's adflegal.org. You can actually connect with Tyson there as well. Tyson, let's talk about, okay, so that's trigger warnings. Give us another example of the breadth of what people are dealing with.
So another thing along the same lines is this notion of security fees. You see a lot about all of these protests are coming across the country where conservative speakers are invited to campus, or they're to talk about an issue that people don't like. And so what the school will say is, you know what, our student body is exercised because of this. They're really angry, and the professors are riling the students up, and they said, so it's going to cost us some money to defend this, because we need to, again, defend the heck, you know, stop these hecklers from doing bad things. And so what they do is they tell the student group, you have to pay for the security. Now, some people say, well, I mean, what's the harm? They are, you know, they are being protected by that. That's a service. That's true. But what you have to realize is that it's essentially a tax on speech, right? Your speech is more expensive because other people disagree with it. So it's another form of suppression that we can't allow on campus. Now, the university has a duty to protect and to maintain order on campus, absolutely. But they need to stop others from violating the law. They need to enforce the rules that are actually on campus. And so we see security fees being used to suppress across the country. And so we represent Young Americas for Freedom and Ben Shapiro, because Ben goes around and he's one of the most effective conservative speakers on campus, because he knows how to really articulate what it means to you know, to have conservative values. And so we represented them at Cal State LA last year, about a year and a half ago. And predictably, the campus erupted. And so the school said, well, you're going to have to pay for security. We sent them a letter, and they said, we're not going to pay security because it's wrong. And what on the day of the event, this professor's released class, told everybody to go to flood the student union, block the doors so students couldn't hear Ben speak. Now, the real problem was they were going to charge him for this. There were 24 police officers on campus that day. They normally only have four. They didn't do a single thing to remove these people that were blocking both doors. So these the attendees were literally locked in there, breaking all kind of fire codes, all kinds of hazards, and they didn't do a single thing. So you see the university refusing to enforce policies, trying to charge them for the security that they didn't even provide. And that's the type of, you know, of impediments that are thrown in the way of students that are trying to bring a different viewpoint to these campuses where it really just isn't welcome.
All right. So I know some of you are listening right now and you're in the midst of packing up your kids for college. And now you're thinking about unpacking your kids for college. And I don't think that's what Tyson would advocate. Right. We actually want to continue to engage in these conversations, as challenging and difficult as they may be. Like, it's our responsibility to become equipped to not only engage in the conversations, but to do so in ways that are sometimes provocative and provoke other people to respond in ways that, well, frankly, expose everything about what they're thinking and how they're operating. So Tyson, we probably have time to talk about one more thing before we go to break. I'm wondering if the challenge is ever given, like, why don't conservatives just stop talking or just stop inviting people to campus? Like, why not just sort of concede that ground that it's now just become some liberal place? Why not just let it go?
So we have a saying at the Center for Academic Freedom that what happens on campus doesn't stay on campus, right? These students,
it's like Vegas.
It is like Vegas. It's the same, very, very similar results, right? Here's the truth we have to accept, that these students are going to be tomorrow's leaders. They're going to be our legislators. They're going to be voters. They're going to be our professors and our attorneys and our judges. We have to educate them. We have to provide a different voice. And I absolutely agree with you. I would not. We're not called to withdraw. We're called to be salt and light. And, you know, we can't lose our flavor, and we can't just be all piled up in a corner. So we need to be there. Here's the encouraging thing. When we bring this voice, it is wanted. There is a desire for this voice out there. That Young Americans for Freedom group at Cal State LA is now one of the largest in the nation because one student agreed to stand and say, I'm not okay with this. And people came to that. They liked that. They're inspired by that. And I think that's my charge to your listeners.
Yeah, I think in my own experience, somebody has to lead. There are a lot of people that are absolutely willing and ready to follow, and they're looking for people that are speaking the truth. We just got to have somebody that's willing to take the risk of leadership. All right, friends, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Tyson Langhofer of the Alliance Defending Freedom about what's happening on our college campuses. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. All right, friends, welcome back. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I am privileged to be joined today by Tyson Langhofer. Tyson is with the Alliance Defending Freedom. He is working with college students across the country on a variety of campuses where, you know, they want to say some things. Sometimes it's Students for Life. Sometimes it is an organization of conservative students who want to bring a speaker onto campus who can help people understand conservative values or really anything. And so Tyson is with us today to talk about some of the challenges that young students, well, students in general, they may not all be young, most of them probably are facing on our college campuses. And what are some of those trends? So we're in a conversation right now about the trends that that folks are experiencing. So talk with us about another of the current trends.
So one of the really disturbing trends that we see are this the allocation of student fees. So what many people might not understand is they pay a lot of money in tuition, right?
This is totally going to make parents mad. Let me just tell you, if you're driving right now and you are just writing a check for student fees, I'm just telling you in advance, this next portion of the conversation is going to make you angry.
It will. I've got two in school right now, and it just drives me crazy. But everybody knows that student debt is this huge problem, right? And so we pay enough in tuition, but almost everybody, if they're going to school, look on your bill, you'll see a separate charge for a student activity fee or a student fee. Now, what that's designed to do is it's designed to go fund the expressive activity of student organizations. Sounds like a great mission, right? I agree. It's great because what that does is it's supposed to expand the marketplace of ideas. You have most of these large campuses have hundreds of student groups, 800,000 student groups. They're all forced to pay into this fund, and it funds things that they're not going to agree with, all kinds of speech they don't agree with. So what the Supreme Court has said was, if you can force students to pay those fees, only if the policy that allocates them is done in a viewpoint-neutral manner. In other words, the school can't say, we like this viewpoint, you get a bunch of money. We don't like your viewpoint, you don't get it. What we find is the schools uniformly do not comply with that rule. So we're representing Students for Life and Nathan Apodaca at Cal State San Marcos right now. So Students for Life wanted to do what every student group wants to do. They want to bring their viewpoint to campus. And so they invited Mike Adams, a professor who we've actually represented in the past, to come speak about pro-life issues. And they wanted $500. They each pay, $1,000 a year, if I recall correctly, to each student into this fund. So they wanted $500, and they were denied. Said, well, we don't fund outside speakers for student organizations. Now, that confused Nathan because he knew that the Gender Equity Center and the LGBTQ Pride Center bring in speakers all the time. And he asked him, he said, well, I don't understand. They're bringing in speakers with these fees all the time. And they said, well, they're different. We found out how different they were. So there's $2.1 million that come into student fees every year. They go to the Associated Students, which is the student government. They allocate off the top $300,000 to the LGBT Center and the Gender Equity Center. And they say you can use those for whatever you want. So they do all kinds of stuff with that. Every other student organization, 100 of them, get $30,000 to split between them. They get a max of $500 per semester, and they can't use them for speakers or for any kind of prize or incentive to get people to come to their events. Yet the Gender Equity Center and the LGBTQ Pride Center can use it for that all the time. So that's not what you call viewpoint neutral. In fact, it is viewpoint discriminatory.
Biased.
It is very biased. Now, let me tell you what the Pride Center and the Gender Equity Center do. They have multiple events throughout the year. One of them is called Gayprol. And it's a month-long celebration of the gay and lesbian lifestyle. Now, when I found out about Gayprol, I told Nathan, I said, well, you need to request some funding for a follow-up event the next month called Maybe We Shouldn't Kill Babies. But I'm not sure that they're going to fund that event, right, this month-long event. But that's because it's viewpoint discriminatory. But they have things called the Pleasure Party, where they hire outside workers. They bring in a speaker. They pay to literally teach students how to use sex toys. That's what they do. And this is every student is paying for that, and yet they're being denied the same access. And so what you've got is this hugely unbalanced viewpoint being – not only does the university get to speak their view through their professors, which are overwhelmingly liberal, they also utilize all these funds being paid by students to fund overly whelming progressive viewpoints from students. And so they're just fighting a battle at every step of the way to get their viewpoint out. But again, this is a view we have to have on campus. We have to have pro-life voices telling women there are other options. There are organizations that will support you. And so that's why we love supporting clients like Nathan, who says, I'm willing to take a stand. I'm willing to take on the largest university system in the nation. It's got 25 campuses. A massive, massive budget. And he says, I'm going to take on that because it's worth the fight, because there are millions of dollars going to be funding all kinds of views that I disagree with and I can't get the same access.
Mm. All right, friends. I know now I know you're upset. I know you're upset because things are happening on college campuses that break your heart. And things are happening on college campuses to prohibit the freedom of speech and the free exercise in of a religious viewpoint in some cases. If students who are advocating for pro-life concerns are doing so, you know, from a particular religious conviction. Certainly, we know that there are pro-life folks who are secular as well, and so they might be involved in this as well. Hey, Tyson, I remember chalking. Is chalking still a thing?
You know, chalking is a thing. It's a really big thing for Students for Life.
Okay, you have to tell people what chalking is Some of them are thinking, hey, chalking is what my grandbabies do on the driveway. What is chalking?
It's exactly what they do. Well, so, as students, these student groups are poor, you know, right? They don't have a lot of funds. And unfortunately, many of them, the conservatives, can't get the funding. So what they do is they buy chalk and then they go put it on sidewalks and they say, hey, we've got an event this week. Come to our event at 7 o'clock and, you know, room C, whatever it is. Or...
It's very eco-friendly because there's no poster board.
It's cheap, eco-friendly, washes off with the rain, you know, no big problems at all, right? And there's tons of sidewalks on college campuses, so it's a great way. And Students for Life have found that it's a great way to get the message out about the resources for women. They're walking along, and it's very, you know, non-intrusive. So we had a client at Fresno State, Students for Life group at Fresno State, and they actually got permission from the school to chalk some life-affirming messages on campus. And so several of them went out early in the morning before the students got there and chalked. And it was things like, hey, if you're pregnant and you need help, call this number. I mean, very life-affirming. And right after they got done, they saw a bunch of students wiping this off. And then they saw a professor wiping that off. And Bernadette Tasey, the president, got her phone out. And she goes up to the professor and says, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm wiping these off. And you don't have permission. She said, yeah, actually, I do. And he goes, well, okay, let me. And she said, well, stop wiping this off and tell your students, please. And he said, oh, you mean this right here? And he goes over and starts wiping off. He goes, this is my free speech. You're not in the free speech zone, and college campuses are not free speech zones. And so he proceeds to wipe that out, even though there was permission and she, you know, she wasn't violating any rules. So that's the kind of animosity that our students are facing on campus. This is an authority figure telling her that. So thankfully, Bernadette decided to stand up for herself and for her rights, and she sued Professor Thatcher. And Professor Thatcher ended up having to pay a lot of money to us for attorney's fees and actually having to pay damages to her and her students whose messages he wiped out. And, the reason this is important, I mean, that was just a single campus, but it's important the students stand up and say, we're not going to allow our rights to be trampled upon. And when they do that, they set precedent for the students that come behind them. And so we need, like you indicated earlier, we need warriors. We need people who will go out and say, they're not looking for trouble, but when trouble comes, they're willing to stand and they're willing to say, you know what? I'm willing to stand. I mean, Ronald Reagan said, yeah, there's a price for freedom, but it's only about half the cost of doing without it. And there's a price we pay, but it's not nearly the price we would pay if we didn't have that freedom.
So Tyson, if there's somebody listening right now and they are a student or they know a student who has had this kind of experience on a college campus, and they want some information, they can go to the website, which is adflegal.org. ADF stands for Alliance Defending Freedom, adflegal.org. What other information would you recommend to them?
Yeah, we have a lot of resources online that talk more specifically about specific details. What are your rights on campus? What rights do you have in class? What rights do you have as a professor? There's a lot of professors out there who similarly feel squelched, like they can't say what they're supposed to say, and they're worried. What can I say in class? I'm a Christian. Can I share my views? And so we've got information about what rights you have as a faculty member, what rights you have as a student on a college campus. We have information about what rights K-12 students have at their schools, because, you know, the Supreme Court has made clear that they don't give up their rights at the schoolhouse door. They have First Amendment rights. They may be a little bit more limited than what you have on college campuses, but you still have rights. And so we've got a number of resources there. And frankly, the easiest way to do it, if you don't find that there, just contact us. That's why we're here. We have a passion for helping students and faculty that are wanting to live out their faith and that feel a little bit threatened, a little bit worried about what would happen. happen. And I want you to know that you've got a friend at ADF. That's why we're here. This is what we do. Contact us. Reach out. Give us your information, and we'll get with you, and we'll tell you. We can advise you. Even if a conflict hasn't come, we can let you know what your rights are, and what type of actions you can take if your rights are infringed.
All right, so let's have one more conversation before we let you go. And thank you for being so gracious with your time today. Students are heading for campus like in the next few days, weeks, certainly within the next month. They arrive, and there's all kinds of information in their email inbox, in their, you know, in text message communications, in flyers, in their mailboxes, at all kinds of booths across campus. When you referenced free speech zones, like I think of college campuses as free speech zones. What was that professor talking about when he said college campuses are not free speech zones?
So there's this also growing trend on campus for, again, to shelter students from not hearing things they don't want to hear. So what colleges have said is like, okay, you can speak, but if you're going to speak, you need to speak over here in this zone. And it's usually a very small zone, and it's usually in an out-of-the-way area so that people don't have to hear these things that they don't want to hear.
I mean, it's like the courtyard behind the engineering building or something? Yes. Is that what we're talking about here?
Sometimes.
It's like some kind of, okay, it's a specific physical location.
It is a very specific physical location, and what they'll tell you is you can't speak outside this. And so we've represented students like at Grand Valley State University who there was three of them, and they had a free speech ball, this big beach ball. And they're just walking around promoting free speech and telling students to walk, you know, to write whatever message they want on it. And the school said, hey, you can't do that. And, I mean, we're talking about three students with a beach ball on a college campus. They're not harming anybody. They said, you need to be in the speech zone. But several days later, they saw this huge anti-Trump rally, like hundreds of students walking through campus and then into the administration building and back out. No police around when that happens. So, again, they're not only – it's not only unconstitutional to sequester speech off in an out-of-the-way area, but then they're enforced discriminatorily. And what the Supreme Court says is, look, you can't have a public sidewalk and tell students they can't speak on that public sidewalk. These are areas where they live. It's like if we had to get a permit before speaking on our town sidewalk or handing out any sort of pamphlet. That's the type of thing we're talking about. And so again, the growing trend. The great news about this. Here's the good news. The bad news is there's a lot of these bad policies. The good news is when somebody stands up to challenge them, we win. We have a 90% success rate. We've had over 400 victories in the last 12 years on college campuses. So if we just have students that are willing to take a stand and challenge these policies, their students, every student that comes behind them is going to be more free on their campus, and their campus is going to be more of a marketplace of ideas. So that's the encouragement I want to leave with your listeners is we can win if we have people that will stand.
All right, friends, and you're going to go to adflegal.org. That stands for Alliance Defending Freedom, adflegal.org. Tyson Langhofer, thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, friends, we'll be right back to make the connecting point. I'm Carmen LaBird. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I thought that we'd have a little fun in today's Connecting Point. So I'm wondering if you are listening in Boise or you know what's going on in Boise and you're familiar with the sort of goats gone wild experience that one Boise suburban neighborhood had on Friday. So of all of the headlines out there related to this, I thought that NPR, National Public Radio, I thought their headline was absolutely the best. Now, this is viral video. You can Google goats gone wild or goats in Boise, and you will see what happened there. But the NPR headline I thought was particularly cute. Kids these days, unruly goats graze hell across suburban Boise. And so any story that features goats, now you're going to find out that any story that I feel the same way about any story that features sheep, But any story about sheep or goats is an opportunity for you and I as Christians to get into the cultural conversations of the day and to talk about the sheep and the goats. Now, these goats were just being goats. Let's be clear. All right. So the fact that they didn't stay where they were put is should not be a surprise to anybody. Goats are goats. Shouldn't be any surprise to anybody that they did not limit their foraging to the lawn that they had been hired to mow. They migrated from that lawn into the surrounding neighborhood to graze on everything from, you know, Miss Lily's prize petunias to the summer crop of tomatoes and strawberries and whatever else might be growing in Boise Gardens this time of year. It's not growing anymore because 130 some goats ate it up. So a local reporter got a phone call really early Friday morning and said, you know, hey, there's goats on the loose out here. So he headed out to the scene and snapped some pictures and posted them on Twitter. So Joe Paris's original tweet on Friday morning was breaking. About 100 goats are on the loose right now in a Boise neighborhood. They're going house to house, eating everything in sight. Nobody seems to have a clue where they came from. Updates to follow. Well, the narratives of where the goats came from and what they were doing and all kinds of accounts of the things that they were eating and onlookers. And so anyway, you have to fence goats. Let's just start with this. If you're going to have goats, you have to have a plan for fencing them in because goats wander worse than sheep. And goats are omnivorous. Man, they will literally eat everything. So there were all kinds of jokes on social media about Goatapalooza 2018 and all kinds of references to or questions like maybe this is the apocalypse. One commenter posted on or posited on social media, to which many people then very quickly responded, oh, no, that's going to be dreaded horsemen. That's not going to be goats. Okay, so now I'm just asking, so do you feel like you would be prepared to enter into such a conversation? Like, that's really what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to be in the conversations of the day and use what the culture provides and what the cultural narrative provides for us to be able to help people reconnect the eternal with the everyday. So there's conversations here about sheep and goats. I mean, have you heard a conversation about sheep and goats maybe somewhere in Jesus's rhetoric? And certainly, if somebody is going to ask, is this, you know, particular potentially the apocalypse? Well, that's going to give you a real opportunity to talk about, you know, the serious reality of the plagues that are talked about in the book of Revelation, which is really not a joking matter at all by any stretch of the imagination. And so although, you know, lots of people were having a lot of fun with this subject matter, you know, the reality is that 100 and some goats on the loose in a suburban neighborhood eating everything that they, you know, could nuzzle up to is a pretty big deal. And so to end the mystery for you. So someone had hired the goats to graze down their lawn, you know, not wanting to contribute to global warming by getting a lawnmower. So they employed these rental goats, because apparently you can actually rent goats to come and do this work for you, from an organization called We Rent Goats. And so the We Rent Goats guys dropped off the herd to do the project that was assigned to them. But apparently goats are not incredibly obedient and should not be given a high level of trust in these kinds of circumstances. All right, so there you go. Goatsapalooza or kids these days or unruly grazing or whatever fun you want to have with that. I just thought I would give you something fun as a part of today's show. Okay, and then the other thing that I want to talk about today. I have just been really disturbed of late at the frequency. I mean I'm now at the point where I'm almost willing to consider it a trend. There seems to be a frequency of incidents where people with disabilities are being treated very poorly in public settings. And so as we, as a nation, are having all kinds of conversations about multiplying the number of protected classes that we have in terms of people groups, let's not forget that people with disabilities actually are a protected class, and that we as Christians need to absolutely be treating every human being with the full dignity of their humanity as an image bearer of the living God. And so as I share these headlines with you, there's three in particular that just leapt off the page at me over the weekend. I want you to ask yourself about the dignity of every human being. And I want you, and then I want you to consider what your calling is as an individual to stand up, speak up, step in, and serve when others are treating people with disabilities with contempt. So there's a terminally ill teenager in Waco, Texas. And he has been cyberbullied. It's so tragic that this is happening at all. He's been cyberbullied because he has taken a stand for life, because he's pro-life. So in March, 16-year-old Jeremiah Thomas was diagnosed with an extremely aggressive form of bone cancer. Since then, he has endured chemotherapy and radiation. He now has a collapsed lung. He's paralyzed. And unfortunately, his pain and suffering has been multiplied by trolls on social media. So this young man, who is a standout high school football player, former all-state champion football player from Waco, Texas, has aligned himself with Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who is in a wheelchair, you may know, from an accident where a tree fell on him when he was out running. And so because Jeremiah has been a pro-life advocate, these people online are tormenting him with language you just, well, just frankly would find so offensive that I won't repeat it here on the air. But the governor of Texas and others have stood up for this young man. And I want us to stand up for him and for others like him as well. This is no way for anyone to treat anyone, regardless of their views. And then the second story is about a Walmart employee who took the time to paint the nails of a woman who is wheelchair bound, who had been denied service in the salon. So this is a woman who has cerebral palsy. And the salon turned her away because due to her cerebral palsy, she can't hold her hands very still. And so upon seeing this woman rejected from receiving service, this employee helped Ms. Peters pick a color. And then they sat at a Subway table there inside the Walmart for a manicure. And I just, this is so simple, and it's so personal, and it's so dear, and it makes the gospel so visible and beautiful that I want to encourage you to find some simple way to reach out in love and concern and genuine compassionate care for someone who is differently abled today. All right, that's probably all we have time for in terms of my running through the headlines that are of fascination and interest to me. I want to hear from you. So remember, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. You can always email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. And the text line here on the show is also always open, which is 877-933-2484. And I appreciate, I had one listener who sent me an email over the weekend, and I won't read the, I won't read it to you in its substance, but I simply want to say that if you hear something on the show and it really engages you and you say to yourself, well, I agree with that part, but I don't agree with that other part, or I wonder if Carmen has thought about this. There's, you know, maybe there's some part of this conversation that we ought to lift up. I really appreciate that. And so, for the listener who took the time this weekend to share their thoughts via email about a particular subject matter on the show, I just want to thank you for doing that and say, hey, keep it up. All right, friends, that's all we've got time for today on Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. It's been my pleasure. Download the podcast and share today's show with someone new at myfaithradio.com. Have a great day, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.